This is the first of a series of readings from my new book, Worship Across the Racial Divide, Religious Music and the Multiracial Congregation, by Gerardo Marti. 2012. This is from Chapter 1, the introduction, called The Dream of Diversity and the Dilemma of Music. I don't know, maybe it's the music. Brenda, mixed ancestry, volunteer staff. When Martin Luther King Jr. took his first pastorate at Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in 1954, one of his first priorities was to diversify the congregation. I was convinced that worship, at its best, is a social experience with people of all levels of life coming together to realize their oneness and unity under God, he wrote, in Stride Toward Freedom. King believed the mission of the church was to actualize the universality of God's kingdom on earth, and that means churches would also become integrated. The church must remove the yoke of segregation from its own body, he wrote, as an expression of the, quote, colony of heaven, unquote, who owe their, quote, ultimate allegiance to God, unquote. He lamented that, quote, the church has a schism in its own soul, unquote. Although King, in his day, remarked, here and there, churches are courageously making attacks on segregation and actually integrating their congregations. Church leaders today are tired of bearing the embarrassment of having monoracial fellowships in an increasingly multiracial world. His pioneering insistence on diversity is now a growing value among all American church leaders. Stimulated by demographic changes in the United States that are rapidly transforming schools and neighborhoods across the country, there's been a tremendous rise since the 1990s in the desire for racial and ethnic diversity across our nation's churches. Pastors and church leaders are rejecting their monoracial past and embracing a multiracial future. The bridging of racial ethnic divides through liturgical structures is an increasingly shared value because the Sunday at 11 o'clock racial segregation of the American church is no longer acceptable. Their growing conviction is that if the gospel is to remain valid as a means toward establishing peace not only within ourselves, but between both neighbors and nations, churches must openly and directly work through all aspects of their ministry to confront proactively whatever may be perpetuating the persistent racial divide. Many denominational bodies have initiated programs for racial reconciliation. Interdenominational networks like InterVarsity Christian Fellowship incorporate racial diversity as core to their organizational mission. And in seminary courses, conferences, and workshops discussing race and the local church, church leaders increasingly talk about racial homogeneity as a form of racism, such that single-race churches are viewed as unbiblical and unspiritual. Healthy churches are supposed to be able to cross all racial and ethnic divides. Integrated worship is fundamental to the vision of a truly multiracial church. My own research in integrated congregations over the past decade seems to point to the critical importance of worship music in cultivating racially diverse churches. When I look back through notes from my studies of Mosaic and Oasis, two churches that successfully integrate people from at least four dominant racial ethnic groups, I found that church members remained in congregations that reflect their musical tastes and desires. Church leaders in both churches believed this was true and consequently focused much attention on the construction and performance of music in hopes of attracting and keeping diverse congregants. And so I began to suspect that music might be the single greatest determinant of a congregation's racial composition. Could sacred music be the gateway for stimulating integrated congregations? From Chapter 1 of Worship Across the Racial Divide.